Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Discover how you can take charge of the all-new Corsa E on opel.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
We've been hearing a lot about the long-term effects of COVID. Indeed, we were hearing it from the medics only this morning and how it affects people in very different ways. One Galway woman has been suffering the long-term effects for the past 10 months, and Aoife Moore is with me now to tell us that story. Aoife, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. Will you tell me when you originally were diagnosed with COVID?
Well, my anniversary, my 10-month anniversary was yesterday. So it was the Friday the 13th of March. And so at this time, there was, I think, 90 cases total in the country. There was no deaths at the time, and there was no cases in the West at the time.
So you were among that group who were completely shocked that they had this new virus.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the case that, you know, when I first had it, and you'll have to excuse my voice today, because one thing about long COVID is that when you wake up every day, you don't know what you're going to face.
Do you know what? It was the first thing I noticed when you started speaking. It's that, and I can identify it now because I've spoken to people before who've gone through this, that it's a croak, isn't it, that you just can't shake?
It is. It's a croak that I have today, and also the cough has kind of come back again. So, it's just, you know, so you'll have to excuse the kind of voice.
No, don't worry.
But yeah, basically, when I first got ill, I could tell straight away that it was very different. It's not your typical kind of, you know, cough. It's not your, you know, it's quite a harrowing thing to go through. So I remember contacting my GP, and I can completely understand where my GP was coming from, because they didn't know very much about it at the time. And they, you know, the likelihood of me having it being from the East County Galway, you know, not a healthcare worker, no kind of travel, didn't do anything outside the usual, the likelihood of me just having it was quite low. So I appreciate where they were coming from a rational point of view. However, it did turn out that I did have it. But the thing is that I got sick started getting sick on the 13th of March. I didn't get my positive result until the 8th of April. So yeah, that was a long month.
Yeah, people will remember back to that time where there were lots of people on the testing waiting list, and they were removed from the list, and there were all sorts of things going on at that time when we were really in the heat of the battle, if you like. But will you tell us what you were feeling at that time, what the symptoms were?
It first kind of started with kind of a sore throat. Then over the weekend, I just couldn't get warm. It was very cold. And then on the Monday, then the cough started, and it's a very distinctive feeling in your chest. You know what it is, you know, it's very different to any chest infection or anything I've
just
had.
Just impossible to clear, isn't it? Like nothing is helping.
That's it. And it's constant. It's all the time. It's like a burning, is how I describe it. It's like the burning away the inside of your lungs, or like it's being grated. That's how I would kind of describe the kind of cough, and the nothing kind of relieves it. Doesn't matter what position you're in. And there's no cough medicine, there's no, do you know what I mean, anything that you can take to kind of help it.
And you had the fatigue as well.
Yeah, I have chronic fatigue now, which is ongoing since I first initially got ill. But when I was first ill, it was, you know, I was bedridden with it for 3 weeks nonstop. So my husband would come up, and he would give me some kind of like Nurofen or paracetamol, and then he would try and get tea and toast into me. Do you know what I mean? He would try and get water into me. I was effectively what I would consider in and out of consciousness. Just before I got tested, I was so unresponsive that he got really scared. So he rang the doctor and he said, "We need to do something. We need to do something. She's not, you know, she's not herself. She's not well." And he put me into the car with the two kids in the car. We went down to the GP, and the GP was like, "You know, my O2 stats were okay. So that's one thing. That's the reason why I wasn't in hospital." And not that I wanted to go to hospital. I didn't need a ventilator.
Yeah.
So because I didn't need a ventilator, they were like, the best place for her is at home. But it was just, it was so scary.
Frightening.
Do you know what I mean?
And did the rest of the family, Aoife, get COVID at that time?
Thankfully not. I mean, I would imagine that they were asymptomatic, because there's no way they could have not been exposed to it. Because like I said, my husband had to, there was nobody to mind the kids. So they had to be in the car with me. And my husband drive me to the doctor, drive me to the testing centre. Do you know what I mean? For anything that I needed. So it's very, even though we're masked up and everything, it's very unlikely that they didn't get it, but they weren't tested for it.
Yeah, when you're living in the same house, like, it's very difficult to avoid it.
It's hard.
And then you had an added stress during that time because your son was diagnosed with autism. Is that right? Did that happen when you were sick?
Well, we knew actually for obviously for a long time, since he was, before he was two, that he had some developmental delays. So we were going through the process before COVID hit. And so we kind of knew, but he didn't get the official diagnosis until May. So basically, I think he was due to get assessed at the last assessment by the psychologist just before COVID kind of everything shut down, before the lockdown. So then it wasn't until May then, until they kind of got things going up again, that he was officially diagnosed.
But difficult to deal with hearing that officially when you're, you know, below par, to put it mildly, yourself.
Yeah, well, it's, the most difficult thing really was his reaction to it. So basically my husband, he can work from home. He's a software engineer, but I was kind of Dermot's main carer. Do you know what I mean? So I was there all the time throughout the day. And then all of a sudden I'm not there. And I'm up in bed and he doesn't see me and he doesn't understand, obviously. And he had a bit of regression in that time, and he had severe anxiety, to the point that when I separation anxiety, to the point when I did kind of come out of it and was kind of downstairs again a bit, he would kind of get really upset if I went to the toilet, if I left the room. He was basically stuck to me. And, you know, and it's really hard when you're there, and especially with the symptoms of long COVID, I can't pick him up from a standing position. I have to be sitting. You know, you can't, you know, sing him his favourite song because you don't have any air in your lungs to do that.
Is that even now still?
Yeah, yeah. So even now it's kind of, I can't do any of these things. If I go upstairs...
That's really, really debilitating, isn't it, Aoife?
It is, yeah, it is. Like, if I go upstairs, it's just my heart. I have these, one of these smartwatches now. Kind of just, you know, tracks my sleep and tracks my heart rate and that sort of thing. If I go up the stairs, it's the same as when my husband comes back from a run. My heart rate is that high. But yeah, my heart is the normal size. It hasn't got, they did an x-ray and the heart is normal size. So there's a lot of conditions that kind of go from that. So obviously you're exhausted from doing anything physical. And I say everything has a cost. So I wake up in the morning, I have to kind of do a scan of myself, assess what are my energies going to be like today. And then I have to make a decision and I have to kind of go, okay, it's going to cost me to, you know, do the dinner. It's going to cost me to put, you know, on do the washing, the laundry, whatever. You know, it's going to cost me to do anything. So I need to make a decision and I need to choose, is it worth it kind of thing. So I'm constantly doing this kind of balancing act, because you have to, the thing about it is you have to get up. And you have to kind of move, because if you don't, then your muscles will seize and waste. But at the same time, you cannot do too much, because if you do, then your muscles are going to hurt as well. Either way, you're left with pain.
I just want to go through what you're experiencing. You have the breathlessness, Aoife, and we can hear a bit of that there. And the exhaustion, chronic fatigue, you said, and aching muscles.
Yeah, pretty much, especially for me. And it's kind of in my legs, and really the most, especially in the evening. That'd be kind of the worst. I'm kind of best during the day. I also have best in the morning. One of the things I have is they call it brain fog, which is a lack of concentration. I can only focus on one thing at a time. I can't multitask, which any woman knows that they constantly multitask. So you can't do that anymore. You can only focus on the one thing, to the point where if somebody's talking to me and I'm engaged in something else, I can't figure out what they're saying to me. I can't do two things at once, basically.
Do you sleep during the day?
Sometimes I do. That would be a really bad day, do you know what I mean, where I would kind of nap during the day. And I have no choice in that. My body just kind of goes into a shutdown mode and I just have to get upstairs and lie down. I'm trying to kind of put some kind of system in place. I'm doing this restorative Pilates. I'm, you know, acupuncture. I'm doing cupping. I'm doing herbal medicine. I'm trying to, you know, vitamins, minerals, get my body to some kind of, my goal is to go for a walk. That's what I want to do.
Like, this is, you know, for people who've just joined us, this is 10 months on from your initial diagnosis. It's extraordinary, really, to hear you describing this. I want to talk to you about what helps are available to you. what's your experience of the aftercare been? Because when we're talking about this, I suppose we're conscious that, the health services, they are still in crisis mode. But what has your experience been, Aoife?
Well, I heard your numbers there just recently of, you know what I mean? I can completely understand that the health service is stretched before COVID, and now it's just on its knees. Like, so, you know, the acute COVID, those people that are in hospital, they're the kind of the A&E, they're kind of the triage, the first point. But after that, make no mistake about it, if you get COVID and long COVID, there is no follow-up. You are effectively on your own. There is no, but you have to figure this out yourself, which is what I've been doing for the last 10 months. Before, there was a support group and advocacy group, Long COVID Cases Ireland. And I found them quite late, actually. And it was set up by Clear To Me and Sarah O'Connell and some other admins. And they're basically a community of people who have long COVID or have COVID. And they've just, they're unwell, but they've come together and they're trying to support each other and trying to advocate for each other. You know, and that's the only support I have, and only for them, kind of, you know, saying try this or, try vitamin D, try this, whatever. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of people that are supporting us, because you go to your GPs and and it's not their fault, but they don't have any system in place or any protocols in place. Or, I mean, they're normally the kind of first point of contact. And they don't know where to send you, because this affects your whole system. So they don't know whether you need a cardiologist or a respiratory specialist or an endocrinologist. Or, you know, for my case, I'm being sent to a rheumatologist because I have a lot of pain in my legs, like I was saying, and I have a lot of inflammation, and they can see that in my blood as well, my blood test. So, I mean, there needs to be some kind of comprehensive look at this. And that, what I would like to do is, it shouldn't be left up to these people who are unwell, who are trying their best to advocate. I call upon the government and the Minister for Health to implement some kind of nationwide strategy for treating patients who have COVID or long COVID. Because I know
we do
in Dublin
hear
that they have...
There are some long COVID... I was just going to say that to you, long COVID clinics, aren't there, in some of the hospitals?
Okay, there's three in the country. So there's two in Dublin, there's one in Cork. And there's one in Dublin, actually, that I think that has shut down during the lockdown. I'm not really sure what the situation is there. But I mean, they were kind of set up, and by the sounds of things, they're not set up by any department. They're kind of set up by maybe doctors themselves. It's not clear to me. But basically, there's nothing here. I'm in East County Galway, and there's nothing for me down here. I can't help but feel a little bit kind of, you know, on my own. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for, you know, long COVID cases Ireland, I mean,
say to people who are in the same situation, that's a Facebook group, and it's very useful for people because everyone's more or less going through the same thing if they're experiencing long COVID symptoms. But you're saying to the government and to the health service, use me, experiment on me, find out what's causing this.
We are nothing if we're not great in our colleges and universities for research. I mean, we are here and we are like happy to be guinea pigs. Like, nobody knows anything about this. I mean, this condition is a post-viral illness. It's, you know, is it going to develop into something else? Like, it's probably very similar to things like ME or fibromyalgia or POTS or any of these other conditions. You know, could you not maybe use the cohort of long COVID people to maybe look at our symptoms and to maybe help other conditions? I mean, there's a huge research potential here waiting for you. Do you know what I mean? And we are all willing and able to do it. I know there was some study done up, I don't know, it was the Trinity or UCD, but it was 158 patients. But there's over 1,000 people in that Facebook group alone, and it's growing. And I just think that if there was more of these post-COVID clinics where people could come in and do this research, or, you know, kind of look at somebody in a comprehensive manager, because otherwise it's just inequality of care. It depends, you know, your ability to recover might depend on whether you have the money to go to all these specialists or where you live. And like, that's not fair. It's not fair.
I mean, we absolutely hear your point about care for people with long COVID. But the other message that we hear loud and clear from you, Aoife, is that you do not want to get this virus.
No, you don't want to get this virus. Absolutely not.
Regardless of your age or how healthy you are. I mean, you're 38. You could never have expected or predicted that this would be your body's response to this virus.
Yeah, I didn't expect this ever. I mean, don't smoke, I don't drink. I'm. Do you know what I mean? It's. But also, what I didn't expect was the whole effect that it has on your whole life. So you have to. For me, anyway, I had to give up. I had a lot of voluntary work or a lot of paid work, and I would have to give that up. You know what I mean? I had to kind of, from my marriage point of view, I'm very lucky to have a wonderful husband, Carl. but he's effectively caring for me now. You know, so it affects your marriage and your relationships, affects your family and your friends. My kids, obviously, are affected by this. My daughter is scared because she knows that I have or had COVID. And she's scared since she went to school because, you know, she has a bit of an anxiety about it. And I have to explain to her I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it affects that. It affects your, you know, like I said, money. If you want to go to get all these alternative treatments like acupuncture or whatever else, it affects every facet.
Okay, Aoife, I'm going to let you go. Do you know what? I hope you have a good day today, first of all, because as I said at the start of the call, I can hear in your voice that it's really difficult for you to speak even. So we appreciate you outlining what you've gone through and what you're going through.
And I think it's important.
It certainly is. And if people want to have a look at that Facebook group, it's Long COVID Cases Ireland. And as you say, lots of people there experiencing the same thing, having had COVID at some point, and some really useful information for people in Ireland on that group as well. Aoife, thank you so much.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Oh yeah, just one last point. I just wanted to say that there, even if you've just initially been diagnosed with it, they've set up, it's a very helpful document in there for the first 30 days and things that you can do. So even if you're first diagnosed, you can still contact the Facebook page.
It's a great resource. Aoife Moore, thank you very much indeed.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.